Do you suffer with any pain, stress, anxiety? Okay, you're going to want to listen in. Welcome back to Mastering You Guys. Matt Sutton here, back for another Mastery episode. And yeah, that is the topic of today's episode, getting out of pain. And to help us do that, I'm talking to Dr. Amy Novotny. Amy's mission is to provide pain, stress, and anxiety relief to those who seek a naturalistic form of treatment when other treatment methods have fallen short. And this is a topic that's quite close to my heart, having been through quite a bit of pain myself in the last few years. In the last 6 to 8 months, turned a bit of a corner. And I do share a bit of my own story in this episode. I do feel really lucky as well that I get to have these conversations with experts in these different fields of health and wellness. And certainly hope we can pass on the wisdom. In this episode, we discuss a lot about pain. So how to get out of pain and stress through just breath work. So learning why breath work is so powerful in helping us do that. We also talk about why pain or localized pain is one of the biggest myths when it comes to pain. One of the big things that Amy talks about is how we hold our body is very much the root of much of our pain. Really interesting that part. How stress influences pain in our bodies, why orthopedic surgeries should be the very last resort. I share a little of my own story on that one as well. How to sit down. Believe it or not, we actually go into a little bit, or Amy goes into a little bit of a step-by-step how to actually sit down correctly. By the way, also, if any of you stand-ups are out there, stand-up workers, how to also stand correctly as well. You can do both of them wrong. How to use stand-up work in conjunction with seated work for maximal effect. And we also even talk about chairs and why, you know, what the myths are around ergonomic chairs are and why they're not all they're cracked up to be quite honest. So, yeah, really interesting conversation around pain, but not just pain, just generally understanding the body and the connection of mind-body. So I think lots of people are going to really enjoy this one. Certainly at LPT, I would say something like 1 in 3 people that come to us have some form of pain going on. So, you know, I would say at least 30 to 50% of our audience are going to gain some benefit from listening to this episode all the way through. You may want to actually get in contact with Amy as well. She has a free group that she offers that she talks about. She offers free consultations. She does 99% of her work virtually with people all around the world. And that is for her PABRI Institute. That's PABRInstitute.com. That's where you can find out more about her, but we will put the links in the show notes as always. Just before we get into the episode itself, just a quick shout out to our sponsors of Mastering You. So firstly, CandaPrint, which is LPT's first choice for all of our printing materials, from our welcome packs, our cookbooks, our signage, everything. So if you are local to Northamptonshire, you want to pop on over to candaprint.co.uk to get your business branded with this one-stop print and merchandise service provider. Secondly, we've got Comfrey and Clove with Sarah D. Sewell, who's our second sponsor. And Sarah, she offers Swedish deep tissue, hot stone massage, and much more. You can head on over to Sarah's services at bit.ly/Comfrey and Clove. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode with Dr. Amy Novotny. Amy, welcome to Mastering You. Fantastic to have you today. How are we doing? All right.
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on here, Matt.
Yeah, no, we just had a little catch up before we started. I'm really excited about this one. It's a topic we actually haven't had on, you know, pain and helping people get out of pain is something we surprisingly over 100 episodes or 105 or six, I think we're on now. We haven't gone too deep into sort of pain relief. At LPT, I would say one in three of our members when they first come to us that they've got some element of pain or discomfort, or they're struggling with some sort of dysfunction movement wise in their body. So it's something that I'm really passionate about, and I'm sure many of our listeners will be really keen to hear some different strategies and maybe words of wisdom from an expert like yourself. One of the things that I always like to find out first is where the passion comes from the expert, which is you. Like where did this passion for understanding pain relief, where did that all come from, Amy? Where did it start?
I think, it started very young. I grew up in a very stressful household. And I remember watching adults and thinking, why is everyone so stressed? Why is that such a big deal? And then the other thing I heard, I have back pain. Everyone I knew equated age with back pain or some kind of body pain. And so as I grew up and then, you know, got older, I started looking at, okay, how can I help people? I really found that it satisfied a need inside me to help others. And I could do it in a different way. And I started in my doctor in physical therapy. And then I switched out of that when I realized that I could start to change my internal nervous system and wiring. At the time, I was training to qualify for the Boston Marathon, and I was running on the treadmill 8 miles at a time, several times a week. And I started playing with how I held my body position, and that impacted how I breathed. And all of a sudden I could run and I didn't have the tightness. I didn't have the aches or pains. And I'd get off an 8 mile treadmill run, and I felt like I just got on. I didn't have to stretch. I didn't have to foam roll. I didn't have to scrape. I didn't have to do all those things that I was teaching people as a traditional physical therapist.
Was there anything that kind of triggered that initial desire or idea to just focus on your body position?
Yes, I started taking some courseware through for my continuing ed requirements. I started doing some coursework through the Postural Restoration Institute, which studies the asymmetries in your body, like your right hip flexors attached higher on your spine. And they were looking at how that helps people or hurts people, and how that leads to compensations, and how that also impacts breathing because you have asymmetries in your diaphragm. And so when I started doing that coursework, it's like, okay, they're thinking about things differently. How can I take what they're telling me? And does that impact me while I'm running? And how can I use that to do something differently with my body while I was running? And it took a while to realize what I was actually impacting was that fight or flight nervous system.
Okay.
When I changed my body position in a certain way, I could calm down the fight or flight nervous system. So I wasn't in high alert while I was running. Mm. It just took me down a notch. And when I changed my body position enough, I could change my breathing pattern to access my diaphragm better, which also further calmed me down. And so all of a sudden I could run marathons so much faster without doing any other additional work. And I blew through the qualifying times for Boston. I mean, wow. Just blew through them. I was like, wow, this is incredible.
Mm.
But then of course, you know, when you stumble on something new, it's like, okay, well, what just happened? Can I replicate it on myself? Can I start teaching other people this? And can I put it into a process? And that's what the next several years were about. A lot of anguish, a lot of tears, but when you feel the relief that I felt after running 8 miles, and then I applied it to a marathon and I ran a marathon pain-free. Okay. That is something that's like, okay, I got to teach other people how to do this. That's where the passion came from, is I can't just keep my mouth shut anymore.
So the listeners are like, okay, we want to find out what these body positions are. What are we doing wrong? What are we doing wrong?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things it's going to rub raw for most of your listeners is we have to get out of that Superman posture, throwing that chest out, shoulders back, sucking up your gut. We have to get rid of that because that takes our body to one extreme. our body is supposed to exist in this kind of imaginary neutral where you can bend, curl up in a ball, go in a fetal position. And then if you want to go to the other extreme into Superman, chest out, shoulders back, suck up your gut. But you shouldn't exist in Superman pose.
Yeah.
You should exist in neutral. You should move in neutral. There are a few times when you should exist in Superman. That's when you're in fight, flight, freeze, or fawning mode. When you're in high alert and you need to act very quickly or very powerfully for a very, very short period of time. When you sprint, like if you're doing a 100-meter dash, obviously you want to be in fight or flight mode. You want to pull every resource in your body to sprint as fast as possible. So yes, chest out, shoulders back, run on your toes.
That's a great sort of acknowledgement of what you're saying of the sprint, isn't it? Because it's the ultimate kind of visual of, you know, because it is literally a flight. you're fleeing. Obviously you're not running away from something, but you are going as fast as you can, and you see those sprinters, those 100 meter sprinters, like literally puffing their chest out. Carry on.
That makes sense. No, that's totally great. And I'm glad you brought that together. Because the other thing is, when you see people do like deadlifts or some of the really heavy weight lifters, they are also in fight or flight mode to generate an almost superhuman strength, Superman strength.
Mm.
But for the most part, for most weightlifting, for like when you're doing like trying to build a base or for running anything long distance, or any cycling, swimming, anything where you're doing something for a period of time, your body's not designed to be in fight or flight mode. So we need to get out of our head that we're supposed to be in this sucked up gut posture, chest out, shoulders, all of those positions, because it tells your body you're in fight or flight mode. So when you're in fight or flight mode, your body's not designed to be mobile and fluid and flexible and relaxed and calm and digesting and sleeping. We want our body to spend most of its waking hours in relaxation mode, but still functional.
Mm.
And then occasionally you spike up. If you're running that marathon, you get to 26 miles and you have 2/10 left. By all means, throw your chest out, shoulders back, sprint and go those last 2/10 of a mile. But the first 26 miles, calm yourself down, stay steady, learn how to keep your ribs down in neutral so your legs and arms work to move you the distance. And here's why. When you throw your chest out and pull your shoulders back and lift up your ribs, you are creating a hinge off of your low back.
Mm.
Your rib cage that's supposed to be in this nice cylinder is now hinging off of the low back. The low back muscles kick in. Your fight or flight nervous system lies along your spine. So the more your back muscles are kicking in to create this flat spine, the more you're compressing on the fight or flight nervous system, stimulating it to react. That puts you in high stress, high anxiety, fight or flight mode, where your muscles tense up throughout your body and puts you in that ready position to flee from danger.
And what you just described was the culmination of about 8 to 10 years of mistakes that I made myself that put me not last Christmas, the Christmas before, in sort of a state of not being able to walk for about 6 weeks. And that was all, it all stemmed from a poorly lifted heavy deadlift when I was younger, you know, that put a disc out. And, you know, many years of trips to the osteopath to kind of try and resurrect that without, you know, getting to the bottom of what was really going on. And what you bring it back to the neutral spine that you mentioned, because that's one of the first things that we as PTs learn at sort of PT school is understanding what neutral spine kind of looks like. But obviously you've got people that have their natural bigger curvatures, whether it be lordosis or different, you know, elements where they're going to be more susceptible to that than others, right?
There is. Obviously, there's differences in the natural curvature of the spine. A lot of that, though, developed because a person was trained to stand and hold themselves a certain way, and they mirrored their parents or guardians or whoever they grew up with.
Yeah.
So much of that is based on what they mirror, but there's also a cultural aspect. So I work with people around the world, and I've come across many cultures where, especially for women, you are taught to throw your chest out, suck up your gut, and you shove your front body, your upper body forward, which increases that lordotic curvature. And I have to be careful, because if I start taking that away, that's a very cultural disruption, especially for the mindset and the body and the mind. So it's a matter of, we want to work to reduce some of those curvatures, but you have to do it in a safe way where you learn how to bring that breastbone in, not by crunching, but melting in, so the curvature reduces. So the curvature may not go back into more of a gentle S curve. It may still be at the more extremes, but you start to reduce it and the person starts to feel the relief. But you have to do it slowly. If you do it in a way that's too fast, your nervous system's going to rebel, pain will increase.
Interesting, interesting stuff. What do you find, sports has an effect as well? Like, the, you know, certain positions in on certain sports pushes people's posture into, you know, that kind of that posture you're talking about.
Absolutely. So sports are great. Obviously, there's too many numerous benefits to even talk about. But the one thing about sports is we need to look at the sport. Let's say, like, we've talked about running, but let's say we're doing basketball. Okay. So with basketball, you're jumping, you're shooting. There's a lot of fight or flight movements in basketball, but then there's times where you can, like, you're running, dribbling across the court, you're kind of waiting to set up the court. That could be a down regulation time where you're just dribbling, you're walking. So that's a time where you want to bring your chest down, your ribs down, so you calm yourself down to get ready for that layup. Mm. So you can look at sports as this, like, roller coaster of fight or flight nervous system and parasympathetic nervous system. So you can sprint, but then bring yourself back down as much as possible to conserve energy to go into the next one. The problem happens when people stay at that high alert state for several hours. Their body starts to tense up because you're pushing it to the limits. So a lot of sports training will be, okay, let's push it to the limits for a long period of time. But that's when people become very susceptible to injuries, because they don't know how to bring themselves back down. Because the more you keep yourself on high alert, the muscles contract voluntarily and in something called sympathetic tone, where the muscles contract without your awareness to guard you. So if you stay in that state for 2 hours, 4 hours, whatever your sport is, afterwards, you try stretching, you try coming down. But if you only apply external factors to bring you down, you haven't changed your internal wiring, so you still feel ramped up.
Mm.
And that's important, because a lot of times when you do a heavy workout or athletic event, you can't sleep because your body is still set in fight or flight mode, because the methods you've used to calm you down have been external, and your body doesn't really change its internal wiring to bring you back down so that you can totally recover and relax and let go. And so that's the magic of the body. You can play with it.
This is the thing, like, I, you know, hopefully like to get over within this podcast, and is, I think a lot of people are unaware just how connected mind and body are. And You know, when it comes to pain, particularly things like back pain, shoulder pain, people think that the location of the pain is in that area. And what we understand is just how much your hormones, your nervous system, your what you're doing as a whole is actually. Can you talk to a little bit? I like to kind of get into pain and give people a bit of. What's the ABC kind of on pain? What's the beginner's guide to really understanding what the hell is going on when I have pain? Is, you know, can pain be located, or is that generally one of the biggest myths?
So there are different types of pain out there. So you have, like orthopedic pain where maybe in the skeletal structure, your joints, your muscles, your nerves, you have pain there. Then you have like something like pain related to a tumor or some kind of in your organs. So the pain I want to talk about that kind of comes and goes, that's not just a constant related to a disease process like cancer. Let's talk about like orthopedic muscle, skeletal, something that just you woke up one day, all of a sudden you have pain when you sit. So I like to tell people pain is a signal from your body to your brain that something is out of position. Okay. What typically happens, and we're talking about orthopedic or skeletal, is your body moved into a position. Now tissues are butting up against each other. That sends a signal to your brain. Guess what? Things are touching. They shouldn't be. So stop doing whatever you're doing. Obviously, we don't always know what's going on. But if you think of it this way, something is touching that shouldn't be. That bony structure is held that way because of your muscles. Your muscles are told to behave that way by your nervous system. So if we can change the nervous system to tell the muscles to behave differently, the bones are then held differently. The pain can either increase or decrease based on what you told it to do. Okay. So if we look at it that way, it's a very basic view. But let's say all of a sudden you have front of the knee pain. I know based on the front of the knee pain, we're going in the generic sense of typical situation. Because you feel pain in the front of the knee, there are tissues compressing there. So that tells me more likely than not, your pelvis is tipped forward. You can't sense and feel your hamstrings. Your pelvis is tipped forward, likely because your low back is overarched, your rib cage is elevated in the front. So you have the pain in the knee, but that's because there's something physically off position there. But is the problem in your knee? Not necessarily. If we look at the position of your breastbone and get you to drop your chest down and in so your front lower ribs stop having that drop off and come down and in, so that your low back relaxes, your pelvis can rotate backwards and you can sense your hamstring, guess what? Your pain goes away. So was the pain in the knee? Technically, yes, it was, but that we have to look at the whole body because the pain likely developed because you were off position because of something higher up.
Yeah, yeah. When we're talking about pain, what's causing the pain? Is it mainly inflammation? Is it movement? What's actually causing the pain?
So for the most part, it's some kind of mechanical or inflammatory process. So something is rubbing up against each other, which sets off an inflammatory process and stimulates a nerve that goes to your spinal cord that then tells your brain, guess what? You have pain. So there's a whole gateway process. That's why a lot of people will use, you know, you hit your elbow on something, you rub it, that rubbing of your hand on your skin sets off a sensory process to block the pain signal to your brain. So then you stop feeling as much pain. There are different pain pathways in the body, but there is typically a mechanical aspect. So when I'll get doctors send me people that say, oh, they're malingering. It's just all in their head. And I say, no, I've never met someone where their pain is just in their head. It is not just psychological, because what happens is when you have a stressor, even if it's just a mental or emotional one, that still tells your muscles to contract. It's called sympathetic tone, that can pull bones out of position and cause actual pain because tissues are butting up against each other. And there's an inflammatory process going on there. So even we work with people who are just stress and anxiety and they have body pain. And it's literally the stress contributes to a muscle contraction that they're unaware of that pulls something out of position and causes pain. So it's mechanical and inflammatory.
And do you see that quite often, that there's a big link between people that are suffering with anxiety, high stress, maybe sort of mental health issues and pain? Is there a correlation?
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a strong one because we're not disconnected from our mind. Our body and our mind want coherence. We crave that. Our body, mind, spirit, everything craves coherence. When one part is off, it's going to impact the other, even if we're not aware of it. Our body physiologically changes when we have stressors, and we're always going to have stressors. So it's a matter of, can we recognize that, become aware of it, and then ward it off, or at least have some activities we can do that bring our body out of it so our muscles stop overly contracting and contributing to pain.
Mm. The issue, I suppose, around pain is that distinguishing between, you know, let's talk about going back to back pain, you know, do I have a bulging disc? Do I have a sciatica, or is it my thoughts? Or, you know, for people that haven't done the level of kind of looking into this and the education expertise that you have, you know, for those people, it's kind of like, where do I start, isn't it? And I was just saying to you before we started the podcast, I've certainly noticed just since we've come back to some form of normality in the world after the pandemic, with more people working from home and just working at desks and almost through the pandemic as a result of the pandemic, being forced to work, let's call it, from home on their kitchen table in bad working conditions. We've certainly noticed a big sort of lift in back pain issues. How would that link to what we were talking about earlier with the posture? Is that all kind of intertwined?
It really is. And when we changed our habits going into the pandemic, there is more sedentary lifestyle. So you're not used to using muscles throughout our whole trunk and our legs and our arms. So the back took the brunt of it. Our sitting position may not have been great. Some people converted to sitting on the edge of the chair, which overused their back. Some people converted to slouching in their chair with their butt really far forward, which still overuses the back or adds pressure to it. And we also, when we're highly stressed, and most of us were during this pandemic, our rib cage lifts up even more to put us in that protection mode because we don't know what's going on. And as soon as that rib cage lifts up, our mechanics in relation to our back are going to change. Our breathing pattern is going to change. We're going to change to a fight or flight breathing pattern and use less of our diaphragm when we breathe, because we then start lifting up our ribs to breathe instead of using our diaphragm to draw air into us to breathe. So all of that impacts our back and can lead to back problems, especially if your back muscles learn to contract and they don't know how to relax. When you go to move, twist, or turn, the vertebrae can't slide as the way that they are designed to. And that can lead to the slip disc, the herniation, the pinched nerve, all of those things.
Mm, interesting. Okay, so this is a nice segue now into the power of breath. You know, how can breath work, something as simple and free, completely free, you can save some money on therapies, just breathing correctly. Mm-hmm. How could that possibly have any effect on all of this, Amy?
Yeah. Well, it's great. Breathing itself, you can use it in a lot of different ways. You can use it to ramp you up. You can use it to calm you down. You can use it to heal. You can use it in different ways. And it all starts with the diaphragm. So our diaphragm, if you imagine like a barn silo, there's a dome on top and then there's walls. In order for us to calm ourselves down, the dome needs to drop down and flatten on top of those walls. That stimulates a nerve called the vagus nerve that helps calm us down. So that process of the dome going up and down helps us calm down. That's why we hear so much about breath work nowadays. Now, the thing is, a lot of breath work out there look at breathing based on timing and rhythm. They'll say like box breathing, hold your breath for 4 seconds, you know, or breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, blow out for 4 seconds, and repeat. Then you have some breathing that focuses on breathing in and out of your nose. Then you have some breathing like Wim Hof that is a hyperventilative breathing, because he's trying to ramp you up even higher into fight or flight mode so you can withstand the cold or withstand an acute infection like E. coli. But that's for short periods of time. You're not supposed to exist that way. So you can also work on, this is what I teach, is how to use breathing to rewire your nervous system to calm you down. And so in order to do that, we want to maximize the diaphragm. To do that, the walls of the diaphragm need to be strong and supported so the dome drops down so it can stimulate that nerve. The way that those walls are supported is by your ribs in front being down, your side abs helping hold them down. So the more you suck up your gut and lift up the front of your ribs to stick out your chest, the more you get away from diaphragmatic breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You go into Superman posture, that takes away support for your diaphragm. So in result, then you have to lift up your ribs to breathe. And when you lift up your ribs to breathe, you're arching your back more, you're stimulating the fight or flight nervous system, you're going into fight or flight breathing, which is why that works for when you're sprinting. You see them stick out their chest so that their breathing pattern can go into fight or flight mode to stimulate their body to go into
What was that example?
So like a runner, a sprinter.
Right, yeah, sprinter, sorry, yeah.
When a sprinter is at, you know, is sprinting, they stick their chest out, they suck up their gut, so now they're not using their diaphragm as a predominant force. They're using the ribs to lift up because they want to stay into fight or flight mode to get to the finish line fast.
And so with breathing, you can kind of, I used to do a bit of a test on this actually, to find out whether you're more of a chest breather or more of a diaphragmatic breather. And this, when I used to run retreats, when we were allowed to go out the country, we used to go to Portugal and just do a little test, and it'd be quite interesting to do it. We'd do a 60 second, maybe a 2 minute test, just to count how many breaths someone would take, you know, within that time. And no surprise, the people that were kind of anxious, stressed, you know, were the chest breathers, and they were breathing quite fast, that they would get something like 20 plus breaths in just in 1 minute. And then the very calm people that sort of breathed correctly, and you know, you're talking like 8 to 10 breaths in that whole minute. And so is that a good test? Is there any other things that you can do to, do you find some people are more chest breathers than more sort of diaphragmatic breathers? Are there any correlations there with the stress anxiety element that I just mentioned?
Yeah. So people who are of higher anxiety, they're more likely to have the rib cage up. They're going to be breathing shallow. When the rib cage goes up and that signals you're going to breathe shallow, that tells your brainstem that you're in fight or flight mode. So besides the position, you're also indicating your brainstem you're in fight or flight mode. So it's going to continue breathing that way. Now, there are people who are calmer, and so they breathe slower. But there are people, this happens for most people, the situation you're in will alter your breathing pattern.
Okay.
So let's say I'm working with you, Matt, and we work through this. You're now breathing where you're accessing your diaphragm. As you blow out, your belly's spilling out. It's not sucking in. You're in calm mode. Now let's say all of a sudden you had a fight with someone. You're arguing. Next time I see you and you're kind of heated, your breathing pattern will have changed without you realizing it.
Mm.
You're going to be in fight or flight breathing pattern. Your rib cage is going to be elevated. You will have changed. So most people don't recognize that very quickly unless someone points that out. And so then we say, okay, Matt, let's work on your rib cage position. Let's blow out, let your belly spill out so your ribs can drop down so we can calm your breathing pattern. And then quite a few people will feel their emotional state change with that. Because as your body learns how to release, you can also release emotions. Sometimes it means crying, shouting, whatever it is, but you release emotions and you shift. So when we look at people, there are patterns, but every person can go change their breathing pattern and go into a different state.
and knowing how you feel and having that self-awareness in the moment to kind of observe the feeling, that's kind of the real key, isn't it? Because it, like, you know, I say it almost on every single Mastering You podcast, it always comes back to self-awareness. And it's always such a great reminder to myself as well, you know, just we have to sort of check in with ourselves sometimes.
Yes.
And so what is your kind of recommendation with breath work then? I mean, firstly, you know, if we look at like what is a good breath work practice, but how often should we practice something like breath work? You know, particularly if we're going through times of anxiety or physical pain, I'm guessing we ramp it up a little bit more.
Yeah. So first, I think is, what are your intentions? Do you want to ramp yourself up or calm yourself down? If you decide you want to calm yourself down, then you want to look at your body position. If you do, you can go find any breath work out there. You can go do box breathing. You can do Buteyko. You can do all these different kinds. But ultimately, if you want to make a change internally, then you have to look at your body position first and then start working on your breathing pattern. So I teach a very unique pattern of breathing and process. It is not something that it's once and done. Mm. I do like free guided breathing twice a week in a Facebook group. So I do that to help people kind of get started.
Okay, great.
Which is great, and it's free for anyone. It's just I have it as a private group so I don't get spammed.
Yeah.
But you can pick and choose. You can experiment with all the different types of breathwork practices out there and see if there's one that matches you. But keep in mind, if you just practice a pattern of breathing, of like holding your breath for a count of 8, 7 or whatever it is, you're not fully changing your nervous system. You're practicing breathwork. But to get the true nervous system change, you need to pair it with your body position so that you learn to calm the nervous system down and sense it happening. That's the key, is what do you sense happening to your body?
Okay. Any tips on the body position then? Because I think that would probably be an area that people sort of struggle with is, well, you know, trying to understand, okay, I get that, you know, we need to avoid like the Donald Duck, you know, sticking the bum out type, you know. I mean, I remember getting some coaching myself, you know, and just on my own training, and the coach noticing my own rib cage was just opening up too much on my squat. And then it was like, ah, oh, that makes complete sense why when I do back squats on those days, I tend to have a bit more back pain, you know, that load, that barbell is pushing down right on my spine. So for me, it's a constant practice to pull my hips underneath me a little bit, just to kind of flatten things out a little bit, you know, and that's someone that's sort of been studying the human body for many years and kind of, you know, I consider myself as reasonably expertise, but if you're someone listening and you're just trying to learn a bit more about why I've got back pain and you know, how do I stand up right? Or how do I get my body in the right position when I'm sitting down at work? Are there any sort of general recommendations around that, like sitting and even standing?
Yeah, let's go through sitting. I don't mess with people's standing position until they've mastered the sitting.
Okay.
Because if you start changing too many things at once, your body, again, the nervous system rebels. So if we look at sitting position, so first thing is sit all the way back into your chair and make sure you have a full chair back. And the chair back, you want it to slightly lean backwards, not be completely vertical. I hate these dining room chairs where it's completely vertical. It is so bad for your body. So you want it still tilted back just slightly. You want your low back to be all the way back, and then allow your tailbone to come forward slightly. So it's like you're rounding out the low back buttocks area, just a tiny bit.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And I'm doing it as you speak.
Good. And for most people, I'll tell them to take away that lumbar support. Get rid of that pillow that you're shoving back there that's trying to shove your spine forward.
That pillow. It's gone.
Yes. If you have a really extreme low back curvature, you might still need the pillow there, but then work on decreasing it. Again, baby steps.
Okay, I've got to interject you there. So What is your opinion on these... what do we call them? I've got COVID brain at the moment, so I'm struggling with my words, but these chairs that are made for looking after our back. What do we call it? Orthopedic chairs, I think.
Ergonomic.
Yeah. That's the word.
A lot of them I actually don't recommend, especially these ones that are $1,000 or more.
Kelly Starrett is against these as well. I know that.
Yeah. So many of them, they have so many prominences and pillows, and they're shoving your body into this position, and it makes it so rigid for you. I just don't like it at all. It's scary to me what they do to the body. So when you're sitting, you want to sit, let your back go all the way back into the chair back, then have your feet flat on the ground. When you're in this position, you need to look at the height of your knees in relation to your hip crease. If your knees are below that hip crease, you need to lower the chair or stack a whole bunch of books under your feet or a platform to get your knees up so that it's the height of the hip crease. When I tell people this, most people are like, okay, I'm fine. And I'll look and I'm like, no, you're like 2 or 3 inches too low.
And that makes all the difference. Two or three inches.
Huge difference. If you put your hand on the top of your knee and then you find that hip crease right at where your thigh meets your trunk, your knee should be at least a little bit higher or at least even with that hip crease. Most people, their knees are a lot lower. They look at the level of their thighs and they're like, okay, my thighs are level, but I want the tip of your knee to be at the level. And when you do that, all of a sudden you feel your low back relax. It brings you down a notch and you can feel your body start to relax, because we want our body position to be in a state of fight or state of relaxation, so that any mental, emotional, intellectual, spiritual stressors that come up in our day are not at that heightened state. If our body's ramped up, everything's going to be perceived as a greater stressor. If our body is calmed down, all those stressors that come don't seem as great of a danger.
Well, that's awesome. That's really, I think if you're listening, you probably want to rewind that and listen and make a few notes on that, because there's going to be so many people that will benefit from that. I've got to ask as well, one of the changes that I made, my back problems really kicked off just before the pandemic. We opened a new studio, LPT. So like any business owner, the workload cranks up, and as a PT, I spend much less time doing, coaching and more time doing the business stuff on the computer and the laptop, more time sitting down. I'd got out of the habit of using my stand-up converter and I started sitting down more. And I definitely think that culminated in an increase in back issues. My glutes were dying. But then I went back to standing and I equally had some issues. And then it wasn't until I realized that my standing posture wasn't great. And because of my standing posture not being good, and that was the standing up desk issues were just as bad. And so I think that's important to mention, because a lot of people use the just stand up when you're working, just that's the solution all for this problem. What's your opinion on working, doing stand up work overall?
I think it's great. Honestly, I think you should change positions every 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Stand up for 15 minutes, sit down for 15 minutes. Now, with standing, one of the things you have to be careful is most of us are back dominant. When you reach, use your back. When you walk, use your back. When you run, use your back. When you lift up your leg, use your back. That's your dominant mover. You're still using your arms and legs, but it's a whole process to go through. But most of us use our back more than anything. And so what happens is when you're standing for a long period of time and you're standing still, the back muscles kick in, your pelvis tips forward, the back muscles kick in more. You might lean to one side, you might put an elbow down. But the problem is, because you are not used to using your thigh muscles to hold you up, you can't sense them working and you can't sense your ability to turn your back off. And your weight starts to get closer towards the front of your feet instead of back on the heels. And that starts to exacerbate. And that's when people start to have back pain, is because they can't sense their thighs. So the back has to do the work.
Right. So you would recommend people experimenting with doing more stand-up work? I mean, I feel like we're just so in the dark ages still with how we work, and the fact that for many people, I think potentially in America, you're a little further ahead of us, but you know, the idea of standing up and working just seemed, because you sort of go to school and you're taught to sit down and it all starts there, it's such a foreign thing to do. But I mean, I bought my first stand-up converter probably about 7 years ago when I sort of first really started to look into this stuff. And I must admit, the first week or two, it was really strange. It took a really strange thing to do. Have you got any tips for people? Obviously, you just mentioned about having intervals almost, so doing like 15 minutes of each. Have you got any tips around stand-up work?
So a couple things. This is a little bit hard, and this is why I don't really teach it right away, is because to get yourself in the correct position, it starts with your breastbone position. If your breastbone's prominent, you're going to use your back more, you're going to be forward more. But if I tell you right now, drop your breastbone in, most people are going to crunch. They're not going to actually melt their breastbone in to turn off their back. So that's, I say that with caution, because most people can't get that correctly. It takes a time and a process. So what I have to say about when you're standing is, look at it from this perspective. If you're going to present and if you need to be on, standing is going to be good for that, because standing is going to kick in your fight or flight nervous system. You need to be more animated. But when you need to focus and hold attention and calm down, sit down. So look at it as, what is your purpose? Do you want to be ramped up? Then stand up. If you want to be calmer, sit down. And then from there, see if you can work towards calming yourself down when you're standing and feeling your thighs. Again, that's a process. And right. I don't want people to go into the wrong position, but work with someone to help you feel your thighs muscles without using your back and without using your calves. The more you can work on that, then you can start shifting your body so your back doesn't do as much work standing.
Nice. That's some great advice. Well, my last question, I guess, is around surgery. So I mentioned my own back issues. I'm not trying to make this all about me, by the way. But I was literally, I think it was Christmas Eve, and I was in so much pain. I was on the floor in our living room, couldn't move. I couldn't even get into an ambulance because I couldn't leave. So it was really bad. And the guy said to me, "You're going to need surgery. You're going to need, you know, I've had it. You're going to have to, you know, have some discs cut down or whatever." I don't know. I wasn't really listening too much at the time, but I kind of knew what needed to be done. And I went away and I worked with my osteopath, a really good osteopath actually. And we sort of organically worked on the weak areas and worked on my body position. Quite honestly, everything that you've said has hit home massively about how right it was what we did to get my body position right again. But I can't help thinking about the thousands, potentially millions of people that take that first bit of advice that I had from the paramedic, that you're just going to have to go and get it, you know, some surgery. So what is your advice to people when they're in that position, that you're in so much pain, all you want to do is get rid of the pain? How do you make that choice?
That's a hard one, because everyone's pain tolerance is different. Mm. So if you have the time to work on calming yourself down before anything, I would really recommend that. Because when you're ready to go into surgery, you need to have the perspective that the surgeon is going to cut things to create space. Your nervous system, though, doesn't change just because you create space.
Mm.
It feels better because the pain is gone, because you have this additional space, but the way that your muscles perform doesn't change, because you still are programmed and have the habits from before. So when you're in that much pain, if you can work through it with someone, learning how to calm yourself down so that fight or flight nervous tension that's grasping on that area that to protect you learns to let go, so we can see how we can get your body back into position, to free up the impingement that's contributing to the pain and contributing to the inflammation to allow you to possibly avoid surgery. And this goes for tears as well. I do this with people who have rotator cuff tears or disc herniations or ACL tears. They can get out of surgery as long as we can get their nervous system calmed down enough to get rid of that protective response that's keeping them in a bad position that's causing the pain.
Wow.
So it's a matter. Sometimes it might mean heating or icing. When it's okay to use all these modalities. Sometimes it means taking pain medications temporarily or an anti-inflammatory temporarily to give you that edge to calm you down enough that you can sense and feel your body let go. Now, obviously, there are cases where you need to have emergency surgery, and I totally understand that.
But surgery for you is a real last resort.
It really is, because there's so much we can do beforehand. And again, it depends on the person. There are people that want the Band-Aid or the pill. I completely understand and I'm completely supportive of it. If you want the surgery, I will support you in any way. But if you don't want the surgery, let's look at the other options and work towards healing you naturally.
Fantastic. Well, I can't think of a better way to end. I really hope this message and this episode, you know, if you're listening, please go over to Apple and rate it. I think this was a fantastic message and an episode. Share it to any friends that you've got that are in chronic pain. You know, potentially they're thinking, oh, maybe I need to go down the surgery route. Maybe they need to listen to this first, mate, and they need to get in contact with Amy. Amy's working with people all around the world right now. Like we spoke just before we started, you know, 99% of your clients are you're helping them virtually, so it can be done. You know, that's the benefit of living in 2022. This thing can be done. So what we'll do, we'll put those links to find out more about you in the show notes, Amy. But is there anywhere particularly that people can go to learn more about what we discussed? Obviously, there's only so much, such a complex thing, right? So there's only so much we can sort of talk about in 40 minutes, but where can people go to find out more?
Yeah, they can go to my website, PABRinstitute.com, PABRinstitute.com. That stands for Pain Awareness Breathing Relief. A lot of resources there, interviews, ways to get a hold of me. I do free 15-minute consultations, so we can set all that up, but if you just go there.
That's brilliant. Any final words, Amy?
Sure, to say, as you go throughout your day, think ribs down, belly out. Try not to suck up your gut. Try not to hold your breath. Let yourself go. It can change your life in just seconds.
Ribs down, belly up. Like it. Thanks, Amy.